I've called this story How Hanori Found Her Second Husband. It's set in New Zealand, which is where I grew up, and the land there consists of several elongated islands, so that there's a huge coastline, and much of life is lived in relationship to the sea. And the Polynesian culture is still alive in New Zealand. Some years ago, the Maori language was being taught to all school children. Polynesian legends are remarkable. They come from a Stone Age culture which developed completely independent of Western culture. Nevertheless, in these stories, psychological growth is described in a symbolic language which is quite universal. The legends include astute observations about human nature, and they are laconic. We have to look very carefully to the details to see what's being said. In Western culture, we're familiar with stories of the male hero's journey. The hero travels into the underworld, fights with dark forces of the unconscious, and returns bearing riches. Examples of this are Gilgamesh and the Odyssey, the story of Beowulf, and the story of Dante's journey to the underworld. Hanori's story is important because it shows an equivalent journey as it might be experienced by a woman. So it offers insights into a woman's development and shows ways that that development may differ from a man's. And you will see that Polynesian culture is more positive towards the feminine than as our own Western culture. Hanori's legend was compiled from several independent records made in New Zealand between 1840 and 1880. And this is the story. Hanori's first husband was Irawaru. Hanori's brother was Maui, the great trickster hero. Irawaru angered Maui by catching more fish when they went out together in an outrigger canoe, and so they paddled back to the beach. As they got there, a wave threw them slightly to one side and onto some rocks, and they needed to get the outrigger over these in order to get in. Maui, always accustomed to giving orders, said to his brother-in-law, "Jump out and put your back under the float and lift it, will you?" And Irawaru did so. As soon as Irawaru was stooping under the weight of the outrigger and was at a disadvantage among the rocks, Maui ran out on the crossbeams and jumped up and down on the outrigger. Irawaru crumpled under it, and Maui practically killed him. If he did not crush him to death, he nearly drowned him. When Irawaru was nearly done for, Maui slipped down and trampled on his body and lengthened his backbone, and by his enchantments drew it out like a tail. And he transformed Irawaru into a dog and made him eat some nasty filth. Then he began to feel satisfied. This dog was the first of all dogs. After this, Maui dragged the canoe to the beach and put everything straight and went home. When he reached the village, there was his sister, Hanori, waiting for her husband. She ran up and asked Maui where he was. "I left him down at the canoe," said Maui calmly. "If you don't see him," Maui said, "try calling, moi, 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 like that." And he made the sound by which our people call their dogs. So Hanori ran down to the canoe, and not seeing Irawaru anywhere about, she called his name. Then remembering what Maui had said, she called out, "Moi, moi, moi, moi." Irawaru, who had been snuffling about in the bushes above the beach, recognized her voice then, and came running and barking, "Oi, oi! Oh, oh!" And he frisked and jumped about her and wagged his tail and followed her all the way back to the village. Poor Hanori, when she realized that her husband had been turned into a dog by Maui, was overcome with grief. It was all she could do to walk to the village. She wept the whole way, and the dog ran around her and waited for her along the track with its tail wagging. She went straight into her house without speaking to anyone and took an enchanted belt that was hers and put it on, and walked back to the sea by the very path which only a little while before she had run down so gladly. All she wanted to do was die as soon as possible. When she got to the beach, she sat down on the rocks for a while and wept, and her tears became part of the waves. And after repeating an incantation that was used by people whose grief made them long for death, but Hanori did not drown. Because of the enchanted girdle she was wearing, she floated about for many months, until her body was all encrusted with barnacles and seaweed, and in this condition she was washed ashore at a place where she was found by two brothers, whose names were Ihu Atamai and Ihu Wari Wari, meaning handsome nose and stupid nose. They found her lying on the beach and thought she must be dead, but they lifted her up and carried her to their house. They removed the seaweed and barnacles, and when she had been scraped and rinsed, they looked on her with pleasure, and for a time she lived as wife between them both. They inquired her name, but she did not tell them. She made them call her Ihu Narupaya, or Stranded Nose. Now these brothers were members of the tribe of Tinirau, a very great chief of those times, who was celebrated for his handsome looks and for his vanity. Tinirau, who lived on an island called Motutapu, or Sacred Isle, had a number of pools filled with clear water, which he used as looking glasses when he wished to admire himself. He also had a school of small whales, or possibly dolphins, who would answer to his call and perform their lively antics just offshore for his amusement. The fame of this chief awoke in Hinari a strong desire to see him, and word of Hinari's beauty soon reached Tinirau. Hinari grew tired of living with the two brothers, and having heard so much of Tinirau's noble qualities, she made up her mind that she would like him for a husband. One day, therefore, when she was out with the women of the village gathering mussels at low tide, she assumed the form of a fish and disappeared. She swam underwater to Motutapu. On the shore of that island, she resumed her former shape and sat down to dry her hair. While she was combing it, she gave some thought to the best way of meeting Tinirau. Knowing of his great vanity and of the four pools he used for mirrors, she decided to wait for him at the pools, and to attract his attention to herself by splashing about when he came to use them. On her way along the beach, she came to a stranded shark, of the kind whose teeth were prized as ear pendants. "O fish," she said, "you are not the messenger of Tinirau," and she squatted over it, and went on her way feeling better. Then she saw a stranded whale and said, "O whale, you are not the messenger of Tinirau," and squatted over it too, and again went on her way feeling better. But when she found a repo or stingray on the sand, she took off her skirt, which was all she had on, and laid it on the point of the repo. She felt ready then for the meeting with Tinirau, and made her way inland to the pools. Now Tinirau was so particular about these pools that he had had some wicker fences built around them, and he kept a pair of owls whose duty it was to perch in a high tree near his house and let him know if anyone went near them. Their names were Ruru Mahara, or Thoughtful Owl, and Ruru Wari Wari, or Stupid Owl. When Hinari broke into one of the pools, Thoughtful Owl flew down to Tinirau and said, "The pools, the reflecting waters of Tinirau, have been destroyed." "No such thing," said Stupid Owl, who had flown there too. "Not true." So Tinirau ordered them to fly over to the pools to make sure. They returned, and Thoughtful Owl told Tinirau that the enclosures had been knocked down, and there was a man in the water. "It's all lies," said Stupid Owl. "These words are fiction." "You two stay here," said Tinirau impatiently, and got up. "I'll go and see for myself." And he went to the pools in a very bad mood. Hinari saw him coming and greeted him in a charming fashion. He returned her greeting and was so surprised that he sat down beside her, in a good mood now. "When you go out fishing, do you always catch something?" said Hinari shyly to make conversation. "No, I catch nothing," Tinirau answered untruthfully, while admiring her lovely hair and her soft brown eyes. "When you pull up your line, do you always find your hook and sinker still there?" asked Hinari, who was watching the mud squeeze up between her toes. "No," said Tinirau, who had snapped off a piece of grass and was pulling it. "I always find my hook and sinker gone." And he fell in love with Hinari there and then, and they walked away to a place where they lay down under Tinirau's cloak. Now Tinirau already had two wives. Their Maori names were long, but their meanings were the enraged one and the jealous one. When these wives heard that Tinirau had met a young woman by the pools and had not since came home, they summoned Thoughtful Owl and Stupid Owl and sent them to find out what was happening. The owls flew off and came back after a while. "Well," said the wives, "what did you see?" We saw two heads and 4 feet, said Thoughtful Owl. All fiction, said Stupid Owl, not true. Tini Rao and Hinori remained together. Meanwhile, Tini Rao's other two wives became jealous of Hinori. In due course, Hinori went to the village and gave birth to a child who was the son of Ihu Atamai. After that, they called her names and accused her of stealing their husband. And when the baby was a few days old, they came to see Hinori. You will need to mind how you behave to your sisters-in-law, said Tini Rao before they arrived. But Hinori answered, if they come in anger, it will be evil. The two wives came, and Hinori stood up, holding in her hand the piece of obsidian with which her baby's navel cord had been cut. One of the wives had a weapon with her, but Hinori had time to utter a powerful incantation, which called on the god named Huiro, one of the lesser sons of Rangi and Papa, and a killer of men. These were the words. Loud sounds the stone, sharp pain is the stone, to strike at the seat of life is the stone, to strike the brain is the stone. Behold, the stone rings out. Behold, the stone will destroy, the stone of Huiro Titupua, spirit even of thee, the man destroyer. As she uttered this spell, Hinori threw the piece of obsidian at the two wives, who fell on their backs and died, and their bodies burst open where the stone had struck them, and were seen to be filled with greenstone. Then Hinori called out to her husband, look, here are your sinkers that you thought you'd lost. In this way, greenstone was formed, the hard green jade of which the Maori made the most precious ornaments, such as ear pendants, and the tiki that is hung from the neck, and adzes, and even the war club known as the mir, when pieces large enough could be obtained. But the story does not end here. In time, Hinori became pregnant again, and Tini Rao treated her harshly. After she had given birth to Tini Rao's son, Hinori called upon her brother to rescue her. Maui came to her as Rupe the pigeon, and took her back to her homeland. She left her baby with Tini Rao. So how am I to interpret this story? Well, I could interpret it as being about a woman's evolving relationship with men in the outside world. It is that, but in addition, the story has strange and inexplicable features, like the owls and the release of the greenstone carvings from the bodies of the other wives. So I also interpret it as being about a woman's inner psychological development. And then I find that the strange features suddenly fall into place, and the interpretation becomes internally consistent and has for me the ring of truth. But you must decide for yourself whether my interpretation also rings true for you. Throughout, we will understand the images as metaphors or as symbols. That is, we will seek to understand the psychological meaning in each image. Jung argued that symbolic understanding is the key to the realization of our potential, a process which he called individuation. And Jung said that all legends function as a roadmap, that a legend's purpose is to guide us in our development. This was as true for Stone Age Polynesians as it is for Western peoples of the 21st century. In different parts of this story, you will see places where we can get stuck in our development, unable to move forward. When we are stuck, then we show a symptom or symptoms of psychopathology. And a particular symptom of psychopathology is a symbol which represents, in part, the particular place in the legend where we are stuck. Or I should say, the particular place in our development where we are stuck. Now, Hinori's story has many images of the interplay of yang and yin. Yang is the phallic principle. It is the penis that penetrates and fertilizes, but it is also the sword. It is hard and sharp. It discriminates things and makes distinctions. It separates us from each other. It is cutting and deathly. It is the sun and all light. It is the intellect that reflects. It is air, spirit, ideas. In fact, yang is consciousness itself. Yin, on the other hand, is the feminine principle. It is the earth, a cave, a jungle. It is darkness, passivity, the unconscious. It is the mother that envelops and nurtures indiscriminately. It is impersonal fertility. It dissolves distinctions. Yin is the body. Like Aphrodite, it entangles us with each other in sex and emotion and in life. And women and men both comprise both yin and yang. But women tend to identify more with yin and to experience yang more as the mysterious other. For men, it's the opposite. Now, a woman encounters her own potential for yang as the animus, a series of luminous or charged male figures. These are men who are compelling because they seem handsome or sexy or fascinating, or are artists, are rich or powerful, or leaders, or seem wise. The man himself, the real person, may be interesting, but to a great extent, the woman is fascinated by the animus, which she projects onto the man.